Universe Today podcast for Friday, November 9th, 2007, when white dwarfs collide. There's a certain kind of supernova that's totally dependable. Let a white dwarf accumulate 1.4 times the mass of the sun, and it'll detonate in an explosion visible clear across the universe. When astronomers saw supernova 2006 GZ, that's what they thought they were dealing with. But hold on. The explosion was much more powerful than you would expect from a single white dwarf. Maybe two came together in a colossal explosion. Malcolm Hicken is a graduate student at the Harvard University Department of Physics, and he's the lead author of the team that made the explosive discovery, published in the November 1st issue of the Astrophysical Journal Letters. Hi, Malcolm. Welcome to Universe Today.
Hey, it's great to be here with you.
All right. So can you give me a bit of history sort of about the discovery of the supernova?
Yeah, so here at the Center for Astrophysics, we have a really great program to follow up on supernovae that are discovered, and so in 2006, in the fall of 2006, there were two independent programs that only search for supernovae. They found it, but they don't really provide any information about, you know, the actual properties, and that's where you really get the interesting science from. And so as soon as it was found, two of my colleagues, Jose Luis Prieto and Peter Garnovich, they took spectra of it, and they found this really peculiar feature, you know, that turned out to be a carbon absorption feature. And so it had all the other typical features of a type 1A supernova, you know, the silicon 2 absorption features, but then it had this extra feature, and that was when, you know, that was when we started to think that it might be something really interesting.
Okay, so hold on. So just to help the listeners, the type 1A supernova, these are the ones where a white dwarf sucks the content, the matter away from a binary pair, and it hits that limit, that 1.4 times the mass of the sun, and explodes.
Yeah, that's correct.
And so this supernova on the surface looks similar, but then it had something weird. So I guess, how does that, you mentioned the carbon and the silicon, how does that tell you that it's a type 1A, and then how is it different?
Okay, so because it had silicon, sulfur, and calcium features that are seen in all typical type 1A supernovae, we knew that it was a type 1A, but it had this additional carbon 2, which said, you know, this is something peculiar, this is something really interesting.
And when does the carbon 2, how does that normally get formed?
So usually, in a typical 1A, all the elements, you know, you have a carbon-oxygen white dwarf to begin with, and all that carbon and oxygen fuses to heavier elements, including silicon, so you really don't get any carbon and oxygen left over. And so in this case, you had to have some extra layer outside that didn't get fused to heavier elements, and that was what we saw. Now, the reason why we think that it could have been from the merger of two white dwarfs is because models predict that when two white dwarfs merge and collide, that they should leave a less dense envelope of carbon and oxygen around the merged product.
So could you give me a breakdown, sort of a story of how that might come together? You know, I can imagine the two white dwarfs spiraling in towards each other, but then sort of what happens in the last few seconds of this?
Right. Yeah, so that's like where things get really violent, and the gravity, usually you'll have one white dwarf that is more massive than the other one, and so the less massive white dwarf will start to disintegrate under the strong gravitational interaction. And as they spiral in around each other, you know, some of that disintegrated white dwarf will merge onto the and collide with the larger white dwarf, and then some of it will just be left around, kind of creating an envelope around it.
Like one is just right tearing the other one apart and sort of adding it to its mass. So it's almost like what a white dwarf would do in a normal binary pair, but in this case it's pulling the material off of another white dwarf.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of similar. And the main primary white dwarf, it might be disturbed a bit as well by the gravity of the smaller white dwarf, but it's principally the smaller white dwarf that is going to be disintegrated. But, you know, I think that's still an area of rich research for theorists and modelers to explore.
Right. Okay. So you've got this stream of material being wrapped up around the larger one. So what happens next?
Okay. So then, at some point, a detonation starts, and the explosion, a nuclear explosion, starts and rips through the whole, you know, through most of the carbon oxygen white dwarf after the merger, and you know, this fuses the inner core to nickel 56, and then outer layers that are at a lower density and at a lower temperature, they won't fuse all the way up to nickel 56, but they'll fuse to elements, kind of like silicon or calcium, stuff like that. And the thing that is really interesting about 2006G is that that outer layer of carbon and oxygen didn't get fused to heavier elements. And there was so much of it that didn't get fused that we could clearly see it. You know, we saw the carbon signature there very clearly. We saw it stronger than in any other supernova ever observed.
So then did the heavier white dwarf accumulate enough material to explode before all the material could have gotten accreted onto it, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it just blew up even though there was still lots of material coming inward.
Yeah.
And so how much mass do you figure was involved in the explosion?
So we don't know exactly. We calculated based on the brightness of the light curve that we think that about 1.2 times the mass of the sun in nickel 56 was produced. And in a typical supernova type 1A, only about 0.6 solar masses is produced. And so, you know, we're talking about twice as much nickel 56 was produced. So roughly that's a factor of 2. So it seems like, you know, maybe the total carbon oxygen mass to begin with was somewhere in the range of 2 to 3 solar masses. But a good portion of that would be in the envelope that would be outside. So it, you know, the main thing about this is that we really want to inspire theorists and modelers to really come up with a better model that describes these really fascinating observations that we've, just recently published. And so,
well, I guess my next question then is, how do you feel that the current models are lacking?
So most of the current models have tended to focus on the single white dwarfs, just because the evidence suggests that most supernovae 1A come from them, and so those are the ones that modelers focus on more. You know, it makes sense. And so I just think in the case of 2006GZ, we've opened up a new area where it seems like these merging white dwarf supernovae do occur. And there are a few others in the literature that weren't quite as clear-cut. And, you know, so it seems like there are a few every so often that occur. So I think it's important to understand them as well.
And I guess that's part of the problem, right, is that I know that type 1A supernova are used as these standard candles. They're used to measure distance across the universe because they always explode with exactly the same amount of brightness. And in many cases, the whole concept of dark energy is based on these supernova detections. So is it possible that some of these mergers are messing up people's measurements?
It's possible a little bit, but I think they happen so infrequently that I don't think it is a huge issue for cosmology, but right now we still don't know. And so I think, you know, we need to have better models to be able to discern between, you know, which is a type, a single white dwarf one and which is a double white dwarf one. And just I'd like to just add something to that, how we can distinguish the two. The ones that have been possibly thought to come from mergers, they tend to be at the very slow declining end of things, and so, or they also tend to be much brighter than they would be expected to be, and so you can rule them out. Like for another example, supernova 2003 FG, it was very bright, and it was obviously much brighter than a typical 1A would be, and so that one was also not included in cosmological studies to, you know, look at the dark energy. And so, and the same thing here with 2006 GZ, it had two properties that put it kind of outside of the typical realm. One was that it was much brighter than expected, and the other thing is that its light curve, you know, how bright it is over time, it stayed bright for much longer than the range of typical supernovae 1As stay bright. And so those two reasons would also allow us to exclude 2006 GZ,
right,
and not contaminate that other, you know, more homogeneous sample.
And so do you think that there are a bunch of these lurking in past observations? Could you go back and look at other detections that have been made and realize the difference?
I think if you had really detailed early time spectra, you could, because then you could maybe find evidence of carbon there and a suppressed silicon velocity.
But it's almost like people needed to know what they were going to be looking for and to record that data.
Yeah, and my sense is that it's not a huge, you know, not a huge hurdle for cosmology. I think that, you know, we can find ways to exclude them. So I don't think it's going to, you know, threaten the foundations of dark energy by any sense of the imagination.
Oh, well, that's a relief. All right. Well, Malcolm, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today. Malcolm Hicken is a graduate student at the Harvard University Department of Physics. He spoke to me from his office in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Now, you can get more space and astronomy news from my website, universetoday.com. You can send me any questions, comments, or feedback to info@universetoday.com. And you also might enjoy Astronomy Cast, a weekly podcast that I do with Dr. Pamela Gay. You can find that at astronomycast.com. Thanks for listening.